Rodgers, who the only place he's going to take it to is the toilet bowl. And then you got Brett Favre, who will take it to the Super Bowl.
I do like me a triple butterburger with cheese. The works, you know, ketchup, mustard, pickles.
Could the package be really good? Yeah, I certainly would love that. But also, to say that, does this look like a rebuild? Probably.
If you think we're in a rebuild, then you got the wrong team.
QB1, man.
Come on, man.
Best QB in the league right now.
What's up, John Money?
He ran right in front of that light.
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Janis.
And Janis, does he stop it? Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
And you're listening to the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Poor Man's Packers Podcast. We're on Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd, boys.
Hello, hello.
Greetings, gentlemen.
And the draft is over. The Green Bay Packers, once again, A pluses all around. One of the greatest drafts in Packers history. Goody just cooked once again. It is over. Finally, after the long build-up. What a fun weekend, along with Thursday. Everyone was just thrilled with the Jordan Morgan pick right off the bat. A lot of level-headed fans.
God, like even, the guy they showed on TV right away?
I hated how that became a narrative. I didn't see it the first time. I can't remember if that was on ESPN or NFL Network, but it's just... People are dumb. I went to like Hy-Vee yesterday, and I was checking out, and I had my Packer hat on, of course. So the guy asked me, he's like, oh, you're a Packer fan. What did you think of your pick? And I of course, corrected him. I was like, well, I actually thought the whole draft was pretty decent. But I was like, yeah, I mean, we took a tackle. Everyone kind of thought we were going to get a tackle, but because we didn't know his name as much as some others, and it wasn't Cooper DeJean, some fans were mad, and he replied, he had to be a Viking fan. He said, yeah, you guys always pick someone no one knows, and it works. I was like, yeah, exactly. Thank you. So I was happy about that. But kicking things off, I mean, Billy, I guess we could start with you too, but overall thoughts on the draft? You weren't on last week. You were in Iowa with Brian Bulaga and Cooper DeJean, but... yeah, early initial thoughts of this year's draft.
Well, so I think going into it, I believe on one of these episodes, I said that my draft crush was Edgren Cooper. And so when we went on the clock...
Is that how you say it?
Edgren or Edgren, I don't know. Either way, that was the Cooper that I wanted more than DeJean. And when we went on the clock and then traded back, you know, at first I was a little nervous. Then it was like, okay, well... Goody has a much better, you know, pulse on this than I do. Like, he must have a pretty darn good idea he's going to be able to get his guy. Sure enough, he did. And then, I mean, after day two, I was basically like, we basically took care of our three biggest question marks, I thought, going into this. So the rest of the draft, it was gravy for me. Like, whatever we do, I'm basically going to be happy with it.
Yeah, and I was fine with everything. The Jordan Morgan was a little surprising, but I was aware of the name, especially when you look at the kind of, that was the end of the tackle run, so it was, you know, timed pretty well. But Todd, what did you think overall of the draft? I know after we moved back in the second round, you weren't super happy, but I think after you saw who we took, you were pretty happy with the draft too.
So in the first round, obviously, we get all the way down there, and I'm, like, looking at it going, okay, we watched that first round, and it's like, how many quarterbacks came off the board right away? And I was like,
offensive players.
All the tackles and quarterbacks.
Basically,
and I was like,
any defensive player we wanted.
That's exactly where I was at. I was like, we need, like, a couple key defensive players, and this defense could be amazing. And so I'm, like, sitting there going, okay, like, obviously the tackles came off the board, and it's like, sucks. It would have been great to have some of those high-level tackles that everybody was really hot on. But when we got there, I was like, we got to, like, I want to say when Chop Robinson gets picked to the Dolphins and we're like four picks away. And I'm like, oh, my God, like the Eagles need a corner. And like, OK, so Quinyon Mitchell's gone, whatever. And it's like, we have like everybody else to take. And then they go Brian Johnson to the Jaguars, Terrion Arnold. And I'm like, oh, like we literally have whatever we want. And then we take Jordan Morgan. And I'm like, I literally don't know who that is. And I was like, a little bit in that moment, I was like, we're either getting Barton or who's the dude from Duke who's like can play kind of anywhere, play tackle a little bit too, I believe, but like supposed to be an elite interior offensive lineman. And so I thought we're going to go that or pick your defensive player. And we went that. So it was like disappointing in the moment. You read up on him a little bit, and it's a lot. If you feel a lot better after that, the rest of the draft obviously heavy on the defense, which was great. You know, round two and three were big defensive rounds. That was fun. In general, super happy with it. A little bit of, like you said too, Billy, like, or maybe Spencer, you said about the Hy-Vee thing. It's like, yeah, the Packers are always taking somebody nobody knows in the first round, and then it ends up working out. And I think the funny thing about this guy too is, was the last offensive lineman taken in the first round Brian Bulaga?
Derek Sherrod.
Oh, it was Derek Sherrod the year after Bulaga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's funny.
One or two after, yeah.
The knock on Bulaga was short arms, and the knock on Jordan Morgan is short arms also. It's just kind of funny that, like, in the first round, the Packers love short arm players. Did Derek Sherrod have short arms?
We'll talk. I tweeted it out. You must have saw it too. We'll run through the arm lengths. Well, I guess because you brought it up right now.
I did not see it.
Oh, so
great minds.
So Jordan Morgan, you know, first round pick. Let's just hop into the fucking thing. We're gonna go through the whole draft, have winners and losers at the end. Blah blah blah. Fun Packer stuff. This is one of my favorite times of the year.
It's
once
fun.
Again, we have 11 new friends plus some more poor friends with the undrafted free agents. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. So Jordan Morgan, 25th overall, 6'5", 9.24 RAS score. He's gonna wear number 77 too, which I like on the offensive line. It's a little like edgy for an offensive lineman to wear 77.
It's like you could send him out for a pass, right? he can report eligible with that number.
Yeah, I just think of Billy Turner and Cullen Jenkins back in the day with number 77. But yeah, his arm length, that's the biggest negative against him. 32 7/8 inch arms, okay? So let's look. These are, within the last 15 years, the most notable offensive tackles for the Green Bay Packers who had arm length within an inch of that. Within an inch. Mark Tauscher, slightly shorter legs arms at 32 1/4. Chad Clifton, 33 inches, so a eighth longer. Zach Tom, 33 1/4. And then Brian Bulaga, 33 1/4. Now, guys whose arm length was larger than an inch: David Bakhtiari, pretty good, 34 inches. Marshall Newhouse, 34, wasn't a great player for us. Jason Spriggs, 34 1/4. And then Derek Sherrod, 35 5/8. So arm length is obviously something you'd kind of like. It's a bonus, but at the same time, just in recent Packers history, it hasn't been all that important for success, which is crazy, right? Crazy that it's actually not important, just the length of a body part.
Well, and Spencer, you and I were having the same conversation earlier in the week. Brian Bulaga was on an ESPN Wisconsin radio show with Brust and a couple other clowns. I don't know their names, but
Brust is the clown. The other two guys are fine. Nortman's good, but yes.
At any rate, they asked the very same question that I was wondering is, you know, well, how important is arm length? Like, it's always talked about. It's like hand size for quarterbacks. Like, does it really make that big of a difference? And Bulaga was basically like, frankly, no, because it's all based on your footwork and your technique. And, you know, Spencer, you and I were kind of speculating like, well, maybe having shorter arms, you don't necessarily have as much leverage, you know, to be able to hold somebody off and let them get into your body. So you're more required to have sound footwork and sound technique, and that, you know, helps make you a better player.
Yeah, you wonder if it's almost like a parabola of, you know, how long you want your arms, and maybe you just want that sweet spot.
You don't want 60-inch arms?
Oh, God, I can't even grab them. And, I mean, maybe that was Derek Sherrod. I mean, Caleb Jones, you know, I wonder how large his arms are. I should have probably looked that up, too. But, yeah, Jordan Morgan tore his ACL his junior year, whatever, 2022. Probably would have been a first-round pick that year if he would have came out after. He did admit that he would have declared for the draft if he hadn't torn his ACL that year. And again, athletic, good feet, yada, yada, captain. I mean, that was
a theme
and competition. Those were the words that were coming across all draft weekend. Yeah, competition in every room. I wonder if that's more of like, hey, Zach Tom, we really want you to compete so that we don't have to pay as much as a tackle. But, yeah, he was I watched a couple videos. He was obsessed with football growing up too. Like, him and his brother were apparently like playing tackle football in their gravel driveway and all this shit. I don't. He's got beautiful eyes. I kind of like his hair too. Jordan Morgan kind of rolls right off the tongue. It's a little plain. It's almost like a Sims character too, but I was happy with the pick. I was still a little surprised by the pushback that the Packers seemed to take. But again, when you look, and I forgot exactly what the run was, but the Cowboys took Guyton a couple picks later, I think 29th overall. And then after that, there wasn't another tackle taken for another 15, 20 picks. So we got, I think we got one of the last of their premier tackles in this draft. And obviously, it's a little bit easier to find interior guys than it is exterior guys. So it made sense with Graham Barton. And we'll obviously talk about his teammate that we took later on there, too. So
I think the other thing with Morgan, too, is not only can he play tackle, but he's also kicked inside. So he has that versatility that Brian Gutekunst loves. And I think we see it with a couple other draft picks later on, you know, that same versatility. So who knows? Maybe Jordan Morgan kicks over to right tackle. Maybe he plays right guard. But just having so many interchangeable pieces, I know that, you know, Goody always wants to get the best five on the field, however that may be.
Yeah. Him and, fucking LaFleur have been saying that a lot. I don't think Morgan actually played guard in college, or if he did, it wasn't much. I know that they had him take some reps at the Senior Bowl.
I think he projects inside, at least, as a guard. Or a lot of teams projected him inside because he is only 6'5". He's not the classic 6'7", 6'8", left tackle.
Yeah, and of course his tiny little arms. And he needs to get a little bit stronger, too. They say he's big in the weight room, but you do watch him.
27 reps.
Yeah, I don't know. They're saying play strength was one of the negatives against him, too. But either way, I'm just another fucking cattle to throw in the barn to see if he can compete to play on the offensive line. Our next pick, second round, 45 overall, linebacker Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M. He will wear number 56, a pretty solid linebacker number. Of course, Nick Barnett. God, I don't know why I remembered other guys, but I think Terrell Manning might have wore number 56, who it's probably a name no one really remembers. But
did Hardy Nickerson wear 56 that random 1 year he played for us?
I could not tell you. Who? What is his name?
Hardy Nickerson?
I do not. That sounds like someone who played in the 20s.
He was like an all-pro for the Jags in like the 90s.
Okay. It sounds like he was just a guy himself. But yeah, Edgerrin Cooper, he was someone who we brought in for a pre-draft visit. Not a huge guy. He's missed, you know, again, negative. We talked about this pre-draft too. He does miss quite a few tackles, but other than that, that's about it for negatives. Like I said, he's not too tall, but just a heat-seeking missile. Knows how to hit guys with leverage at times. It seems like when he hits someone, he fucking smacks them. And you obviously have to kind of compare him to Quay, the other guy who, I mean, God, I was going to look this up, but I think Goody has probably drafted more inside linebackers like over the last 3 years higher than we had like the previous 20. I mean, A.J. Hawk was the only other guy outside of A.J. Hawk. Like
Barnett would have been.
Yeah, Barnett. Borderline
at that point. At this point, I don't remember where he was drafted.
I guess he was a first round pick, but outside of that, like, what was it? Blake Martinez, maybe? Oren Burks, which were like third or fourth round guys?
Burks, I'm pretty sure, was third.
No, I think Burks was, I think really? He was third, yeah. Yeah, because he was always really athletic, a smart guy too. He just didn't know how to play football too well. But yeah, he's seeking missile. And again, comparing him to Quay, the one knock against Quay was how he wasn't that productive in college and just looking at these numbers. So Quay's college career, he had 5 total sacks and 11 tackles for loss. Last year, Edgerrin Cooper had 8 sacks and 17 tackles for loss. He led Texas A&M in just about every possible category, you know, tackles for loss, tackles, sacks, all that shit, forced fumbles. And I don't know, I really love, I mean, I don't know, we'll see it. You know, these guys who do get drafted high at inside linebacker don't always work out, and that's kind of all around the league. You know, a lot of these perennial all-pros are kind of mid-round guys who find a good system and they're coached up, but it's going to be, God, I can't remember our new inside linebacker coach's name. It's like all Italian. Fuck. But big mission for him because it's Quay, this guy, obviously Hopper, who we drafted later on, and Isaiah McDuffie too. But I'm excited at the aesthetic too. He's got all the like armbands on his up and down his arms. And number 45, he very much looked like a college linebacker. But thoughts? Be happy with this? You know, it's weird. Once again, everyone always says we don't value inside linebacker. Ted really didn't. But Goody again now, what, twice in 3 years where we use a pretty high pick on one.
I think super happy at 45 with Edgerrin Cooper and where we got him. And this is a guy who's like ultra slippery. Like, guys have a hard time getting their hands on him, blockers downfield. And it's like the way that he goes about getting to the ball, I just feel like is more unique than I've ever seen. Like, when with looking at like a highlight reel for a linebacker, it's like the most unconventional routes to the ball. Like, he's not just, you know, taking his inside shoulder and ripping through, you know, the guard that comes out to block him. It's like the weirdest slippery movement to get to the ball carrier. So it's like, that's an interesting thing. I'm interested to see how that plays out in the NFL with bigger, quicker blockers. But regardless, he's aggressive. I think the big thing too, when as we talk about these next couple defensive players, is like aggressive players, guys that are flying to the ball, moving fast, and hitting hard. And like, this defense got tougher, and that's what it feels like Goody was looking for in the draft, is physical, athletic guys. He's always looking for athletes, but it doesn't seem like he's always looking for, I'm just going to say, like, super physical guys. Like, in years past, like, I don't know that his first couple drafts, we were getting a lot of, like, aggressive athletes. They were, like, they're physical freaks, but anyways, you get the point.
It was athletes over dogs.
These are dogs. Like, Edgerrin Cooper, Javon Bullard, dogs. Evan Williams, dog. Ketan Oladapo, dog. Like, these guys are physical. So I think that's really fun, and it's going to be interesting to see as we progress, as we get through the season, like, how those guys show up once they start playing at NFL speed.
The other thing that excites me about Cooper, and I use this word to describe Morgan, I'm sure I'm going to use it again, is versatility. You know, Spencer, you talked about the 8 sacks and 17 tackles for loss or whatever this year. The dude can get after the passer. He can chase down, you know, a running back on the edge or something like that. But he also, because of his speed, he's got some coverage skills. They still need to be developed, but he has the natural ability to be a true three-down linebacker in the NFL.
Yeah, again, and just, once again, just an athlete. It's kind of funny how, and we'll talk about it when we get to Hopper too, but, I mean, Isaiah McDuffie, you know, he was kind of penciled in as a starter, and now he's going to be competing, not just for a starting spot, but I wouldn't be surprised if a couple guys show up and really make a name for themselves if he, I don't know, might be on the outside looking in. Moving on next to the our next second-round pick, 58th overall safety, Javon Bullard, the safety out of Georgia. He will wear number 20, which is an aesthetically pleasing-looking number, I think. Did not allow a tackle in or a touchdown in coverage last year. Not a big guy, also not as fast as Darnell Savage, but he is actually a willing tackler. And I said this last year how, you know, especially in the playoffs, Darnell Savage just didn't play safety the way you want your safety to play. Like, he's just was always a little too timid. And I even look back in college, I mean, there was some times where he, when he had a free release, where he would really be aggressive. But you look at Bullard and you watch him, and he's just taken on multiple guys. He played in the slot quite a bit. Physical, versatile. And if nothing else, you know, the two big needs that we really had on defense going into this draft, inside linebacker and safety. And the Packers absolutely got the top two guys on their board, at least, with Tyler Newbin not testing very well, and hard not to get excited about that.
Yeah, so Javon Bullard, what is his head coach described him as? A little stick of dynamite.
Okay.
I'm a little offended by little stick of dynamite. He is 5'10", you know, for all the short kings out there.
I'm 6 feet tall, so I don't know.
Well, we don't need to talk about specifics for us. Okay, we don't need to talk about us. I'm just saying maybe some people would be offended. Anyways, super physical. Plays like that box safety mentality. He's got the athleticism to kind of play anywhere, and I think in his press conference he even said, "I don't think I know I can play all three positions," talking about safety, corner, and I think slot. And so that was kind of fun, just like that dog mentality of like, just like, I can do anything, which is kind of what you love to see and like hear from a player, especially it's like the BJ Coleman vibes. If anybody remembers, this might be,
I wish he was not a seventh round pick.
I wish you didn't bring him up already. Cause I was
BJ Coleman. Oh, you're going to bring him up later with Michael Pratt.
I mean, come on. He's the first seventh round quarterback taken since the legend BJ Coleman. And they're both from Southern schools. Yeah.
I spoiled it. We can talk about it again later, but he said, I'm going to be the best Packers quarterback the Green Bay Packers have ever drafted.
Yes, BJ Coleman back in the day. The best quote ever.
He didn't say Packers that many times. But he was like, and it was like, oh, wow. We were in like the peak of Aaron Rodgers at the time, too. It was great. But you like having those guys, like I said before, too, like physical, aggressive. Like, we keep hearing about, like, Jeff Hafley's going to attack. And, like, this draft feels like the Packers are going to go attack offenses. And that's what's really exciting, I think. Like, you look at Cooper, you look at Bullard, you know, we're going to talk about Hopper. It's just like these guys are attacking, right? And that's what you love to see from these guys. So it's what the opposite of Joe Barry's defense, right? And so, like, these guys, I think, are a reflection of at least what we think Jeff Hafley is going to do. So I think that's exciting.
Two things on Bullard for me. I saw after the draft, I think in his last 2 years at Georgia, he missed like a total of 12 tackles total.
I thought you were going to say games for a second. I was like, ooh.
I mean, I don't know how many tackles Darnell Savage missed, but I'd be willing to bet he missed about 12 in any two-game stretch in his entire Packers career. So, I mean, already an improvement. Todd, you touched on it. Who knows how Hafley is going to use, you know, the players that we have on defense now. And again, I'm going to keep beating the dead horse, versatility. Like you said, is Bullard going to play deep? Is he going to play in the slot? Is he going to play, you know, in the box? Like, we don't know. And that's the exciting thing for training camp coming up in preseason, to see how Hafley's going to move these pieces around and kind of like the offensive line, create, you know, a package where the best 11 are on the field almost.
Yeah, I wonder, because a big thing, especially early on when Matt took over on offense, was finding roles for guys. You know, Tyler Irvin would come out and have a specific role. Alan Lazard early on came out and had a very specific role. I wonder if we're going to do that with the defense. And then looking at the safety spot here, too, if you said in February that Xavier McKinney was going to, in 2024, would play for the Giants and Tyler Newbin would be playing for the Packers, you'd be like, oh, that's probably what's going to happen. And they flip-flopped in that time, which I'm pretty happy about again. But with getting the talent in the secondary, very, very excited. Moving on, running back. I really thought we were going to take the kid out of Tennessee, Jalen Wright. But the next, I mean, Marshawn Lloyd went before him, and a very similar type guy. Marshawn Lloyd, third round, 88th overall out of USC. He will wear number 32. A lot of people don't like the aesthetic. I think of Cedric Benson first, obviously Brandon Jackson as well.
I would say Brandon Jackson is who I think of.
Yep. But explosive running back. He is, and you know, we always use superlatives or whatever on this podcast, but he is the pumped up extreme version of Aaron Jones, which who he'd obviously be replacing. So, broke 47 tackles last year, averaged 7.1 yards a carry on 116 carries, caught 34 passes, decent out of the backfield. He can cut, you know, he's fast. You watch him cut and change direction. It's like, holy shit, like my knees hurt watching it. And maybe I just didn't watch him leading up to it because I kind of have a sour taste in my mouth with USC running backs after Reggie Bush, because I remember Ronald Jones had a lot of hype in like dynasty leagues and shit, and he absolutely sucked ass. But Marshawn Lloyd, he fumbles way too much. Over his career, on average, once every 36 carries, not very good. He takes weird hits like Aaron Jones does too. Like the way he changes direction, he kind of opens himself up for weird hits, which also leads to the fumbles. And Aaron Jones, he didn't fumble a ton, but when he did, it was always at the worst time imaginable. It always seemed to happen in like the playoffs or whatever, but you know, not super tall either, 5'9", 200, or sorry, he's, so looking at both of these guys, Aaron Jones ran a 4.56 40 at 5'9", 207 pounds. Apparently he was playing at like 197 last year, that's what Wes Hodquist said. But Marshawn Lloyd ran a 4.46, 5'8", and 220 pounds, so much beefier version. And he also did 25 reps on the bench press, which was, I believe, the like highest of all the running backs this year, at the 93rd percentile. So I'm excited. Again, not the name I was thinking of, but I was assuming we're going to take a running back in the first 100 picks, and we sure should ended up doing that. So are you guys as excited as I am? Because I think it's not going to be him. It might be other guys on the roster who force it, but the days of A.J. Dillon might be numbered after this pick. I don't know.
I think this is a good... I'm hoping this is a good pairing with Josh Jacobs. This is like the lightning to the thunder, with Josh Jacobs being a little bit more of a thumper. Not quite like A.J. Dillon size, but like more of a thumper. And like the way that this guy bounces outside and can create on his own also reminds me a little bit of like the skill set that Aaron Jones possess, of like not needing, you know, big running lanes and stuff like that. And the way he hits the hole fast and gets to the second level, like before you can even realize he's there, like that's like the fun change of pace type of thing. Not that, I mean, I feel like Josh Jacobs can do it all, but like Lloyd is like, he's just explosive and he's a slasher. And like, that's like a fun, like change of pace guy to have in there. So like, it'll be interesting to see too. I agree. With this pick, it does feel like, are you keeping maybe the contract so cheap, A.J. Dillon stays around? But it's like, I mean, this guy, I mean, watch his film. It's not A.J. Dillon.
If we're keeping three backs, I think Emmanuel Wilson is a better running back than A.J. Dillon.
I didn't mean to get you going on A.J. Dillon.
I was.
My point was just, this guy's the number two.
Yeah, I think so too. The issue is the pass blocking and the fumbles, which is not what you want from a rookie. So that it's going to be a big, he's going to make the roster either way. Right. But I do.
The fumbles scare me the most. That's this. When you said like every 36 or 37 snaps or whatever you said, it was like, that's a terrifying stat, but I hope he can shore it up.
And he plays a little weird too. But at the same time now with Jerry Montgomery getting fired last year, Ben Sturman's, I believe, is the most senior position coach on this team, and he obviously, you know, trained in guys like Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams very early on. So Billy, thoughts on this new, the only real weapon on offense that we took out of this draft?
Well, so just to put a bow on the A.J. Dillon conversation, I think the two things that will determine where Lloyd falls in the depth chart is, number one, pass blocking, like we said, and the fumbles. If he's even passable at both of those, there's zero chance that A.J. Dillon is above him on the depth chart. And at that point, who would I rather have as the third back, A.J. Dillon or, you know, a somewhat unknown commodity with a little bit more upside in Emmanuel Wilson? I know I would take Wilson, just all things considered, regardless of how I feel about Dillon. I kind of like the comparison to Aaron Jones. It's kind of a sneaky comparison because Lloyd is explosive like Jones was. I was just looking at Jones' college stats. So Jones missed most of his junior year with an injury. His senior year, rushed for 7.7 yards a carry. His sophomore year, 5.5 yards a carry. Lloyd, in lesser usage, partly because obviously USC, they had the Heisman Trophy winner in Caleb Williams, 7.1 yards a carry his last year. And in his second year, which was at South Carolina, another USC, which is interesting, 5.2 yards a carry. So similar numbers to Aaron Jones in productivity as in college, similar in that they're both explosive, but having kind of that ability to get some of the tough yards between the tackles, I think, makes Lloyd a really intriguing player.
Yeah, I'm excited. He's going to be the guy to pay attention to during training camp, because that a lot of dominoes will fall as far as, you know, I think everything else on offense is pretty much set as far as the pass catchers and runners go. So he's really the only variable out there. Moving on, fourth round, 111 overall, safety Evan Williams out of Oregon. He's going to, you know, speak of the devil, Aaron Jones, wear number 33.
Hopper? Do we miss Hopper?
Oh, I might have. Yep, I scrolled right by. My bad. Haha. Third round, number 91, linebacker Tyron Hopper out of Missouri. Number 59, Devondre Campbell's old number, which I think he's going to look like Devondre too. He's got some pretty long dreads himself, but biggest reach of the draft probably for the Packers. He came in on a visit. I was thinking of him. I couldn't think of the name last week, but I was thinking of him as almost like a Tyreek Carpenter until we took him in the fucking third round because he seems like more of a special teams guy just for where he was valued and all that shit. But obviously, we took him a little higher than that. 6'1", 231 pounds. His RAS was like 7-something. He's kind of explosive. I might have mentioned it. He came in for a visit, and they timed him a tenth faster than he was at the combine and the pro day. He just looks a little slow on tape. I don't know jack shit. You know, I like Kamal Martin coming out of the draft, so I don't know fucking anything.
He doesn't
anything.
Pop on tape. Like, his highlight reel doesn't pop.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a little bit like...
He looks like Devondre. Sucks. Yeah, he already is playing like him, just at the college level. And the Packers view him as a run stuffer. Goody and the presser said he's really physical, he can run, but his stopping power when he takes on blockers is pretty impressive. But yeah, biggest thing for me with this is, again, Isaiah McDuffie. We were, you know, he had the history with Jeff Hafley, and now it looks like he's going to be competing pretty hard for getting on the field here. Any thoughts on Hopper? I don't know. He's probably the most boring pick, I feel like, out of the draft.
So I would say that, but at the same time, ooh, it seems like one of his biggest strengths is blitzing. So, like, when you – one of his – like, if you look at his draft profile, like, the strengths and weaknesses, like, one of those is his blitzing ability and his ability to get past blitz pickup, which is, like, that's not boring. Like, that's a fun thing. But, like, when you watch his highlight reels – his highlight reel kind of is like boring, but you watch him and it's like, oh yeah, he does work around and he works through running backs pretty good. So it's like interesting to see if he'll get on the field, if he has a role in blitz packages, not just special teams. Felt like a special teams pickup initially, but the more like you kind of look at it and you hear stuff, it's like, oh, maybe he is like, maybe he comes in rush situations
right
in a year or two. Not necessarily this year, but like down the line, maybe he turns into a third down guy, which would be kind of an interesting play if Hafley decides to do that with him.
That was my exact thought, Todd, when we drafted him, was it feels like he's a better kind of downhill, like see ball, get ball type of linebacker, which given where we are at the position group, when, you know, we took him, we have Quay, we have McDuffie, we had just taken Cooper in the previous round. So there's not really a clear line to a starting role for Hopper, which is fine. We don't necessarily need him to step in day one. But like you said, I think special teamers, certainly his speed is interesting on special teams, especially with the new kickoff rule. It seems like, from what I understand, you want to go kind of smaller and faster players, physical players on the kickoff coverage team. And I certainly think he brings that. And then if he shows something in the pass rush department, you know, maybe there's a sub package for him to get on the field a little bit, especially with some of the uncertainties at end. You know, maybe he turns into like a stand up pass rusher on the edge with Enigbari coming off an ACL. Rashawn Gary, you know, had an inconsistent finish to the year. LVN still learning. So might be an opportunity as a pass rusher next year.
And it is back to the whole competing bullshit that they were pushing all weekend too, because, you know, I mean, you look at that roster like you were kind of talking about, but the actual defensive linebackers, you know, Quay, Isaiah McDuffie, Cooper, and then after that, you know, Eric Wilson, Christian Welch, they're special teams guys, they're not really defensive guys, so getting another body in there to push that competition, I think, if nothing else, is gonna probably help out more than what he's actually gonna do on the field this year. But back to the safety that I went snip, snap, snip. Fourth round, 111 overall. Safety Evan Williams out of Oregon, number 33. Micah Hyde's old number. And obviously Aaron Jones. Another guy, versatile, that the Packers think can play safety, but also in the slot. I think a little bit more of a box safety, too, than Bullard. But solid special teamer, blocked a punt and extra point. Solid tackler as well. Both Bollard, I believe it was Bollard and Williams, were both of the best safeties at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, one on each team.
Yep, one on each team, yep. And Justice Mosqueda put this out there. He's an Oregon fan, and one of the coaches for Oregon texted him that we drafted, you know, the best player on Oregon's defense last year, which is like, oh, that's good. But then you think, it's like, okay, well, there is a lot of college football teams, and if there's got to be one good
at
one
least
on
the staffer
team.
Wasn't like, hey, you got our third best. Right? Yeah. Right? It could be worse.
Yeah.
Right?
True. So, I don't know. Again, another body to throw in there, all about competition. It is, it is weird, and I know I'm a bit of a crazy person, but you look at the last three drafts and how well they've gone, and how we have found immediate, you know, we needed an inside linebacker and some safeties going into this draft. We got them. Last year, we were dead at pass catchers. We drafted all the wide receivers and tight ends, and even the year before that, we got some good pieces in Christian Watson, Romeo Dubs, and the linebackers, and Quay, and Devonta Wyatt, defensive line, and then you look at the previous 2 years, and it's like, well, what the fuck were we doing here with these picks? You don't want to draft for need. It worked out pretty well here, but again, competition. Any big thoughts on Evan Williams here, though, guys? Safety, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, not really.
I think more than anybody else, he is a run defense first safety, where it's like, yeah. If you watch this guy's tape, it is, he's making plays near the line of scrimmage all the time. He ran a 4.6, which is not great, but like it's one of those guys that plays fast, right? You talk about
Micah Hyde,
maybe looks to play a little slow, but he's got maybe a 4.5 if Goody's being honest.
He's never
4.6 for a safety. You're looking at like, oh, that feels pretty slow, but then you watch him play and it's like when he's coming downhill, it's fun to watch. More of like the Keyshawn Nixon, like in the run game vibes, like where he's like, it's a little bit of like reckless the way he comes down and hits the running back, you know, on the outside play. So it's like, it's fun to watch, like for sure a special teams impact from Williams in the first year. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what his role expands into if it does. So, but like, gotta be a special teamer. Like this guy is, like Bullard, he's like a missile, right, in that run game. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. But yeah, I like the guy. I think he's, at first it felt like a little bit of like, what are we doing here? It feels like a little bit of a reach. And like, how many safeties can we put on the field at once? I have no idea. Maybe we can put 5. Who knows? But it's good to have competition. And obviously, special teams could add another body.
Watching his highlights, you know, you talk about tacklers, especially coming down in the box from like a safety position or a corner position. Folks will say, oh, he's a willing tackler. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's any good. This dude is a willing tackler. He's an able tackler. Like, he'll hit you and he's going to let you know about it. You're going to feel it. So that's fun to watch. Again, with the versatility and how Halfley is going to move these pieces around on defense, there might be a path to early playing time for him, especially with how bare the safety room was going into the draft. And based on the way we drafted, I mean, I don't really see a need to bring back Rudy Ford. I know, Spencer, you said you wouldn't mind bringing him back before the draft. I mean, at this point, that ship has sailed. So it's basically the three safeties we drafted, McKinney, and then Zane Anderson, and who was the other safety on the roster? Was
Anthony
there
Johnson
one?
Jr.,
Anthony
Benny Sapp Jr. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but again, based on who we had, you know, you might argue that Williams is already the third safety on the roster.
It is funny how last year Goody was like, okay, how many cheap safeties can we get in? And this year it's like, okay, how many draft pick safeties can we bring in? So, yeah, very interested to see how that turns out. And there is obviously one more safety we got to talk about, too. But next pick, fifth round, 163 overall, center Jacob Monk out of Duke. He will wear number 62, which is the perfect number for a center. I think Evan Diedrich Smith wore it. Jeff Saturday might have too, or was he 63?
Saturday was 63.
Whatever. This isn't very important. RAS of 9.74. we all thought we were going to take an interior offensive lineman from Duke, but maybe in a vacuum, my favorite pick from the draft, just because I'm going to like repeat what Goody said.
Wow.
It was... One, you watch his tape, and again, I don't know anything, but you just see this meatball run around pushing dudes, and he looks strong. He looks like a center. You know, Josh Myers, you watch him sometimes, and he can move, but he's such a big guy. It's not what you're used to seeing, you know, and you think before with Corey Linsley, I guess he was kind of a bigger guy too, but again, Evan Diedrich Smith, Jeff Saturday. I mean, Scott Wells was relatively small for a center, especially compared to Jacob Monk, but yeah, 5-year starter at Duke, described as graceful movements. Again, just big ball run around there. Goody was saying how everyone in the draft room was excited about getting him, and they did move up like 4 or 5 spots to do it. So, I don't know. I'm happy.
Which in the fifth round, tells you that they really like the guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the last name Monk too. I don't know, a little goofy. I kind of think a little bit because there was that Tony Schlub or whatever the hell his name is, the Green Bay native. He was at the Chiefs game last year at Lambeau with Taylor Swift. Was he even Monk? Yeah, he was in Monk, and there we go. We follow that up with taking Monk in the draft, and he's apparently allergic to cold water. I don't know. That seems like a little overblown. I don't know how much we want to talk about that. But again, competition at center. I do wonder what this means for Zach Tom and all the talk we've had about that. But you know, I talked about, you know, Lloyd and figuring that out at running back. I know that's going to shake out. But the offensive line, I mean, fuck, we have so many options for what we're going to roll out week one in Brazil. But Monk,
I think this is a fun one with the athleticism. You know, I was personally hoping for Barton in the first round if we go offense. And then this guy's like a nice consolation prize. And the effect of like almost just as athletic, if you look at his RAS profile, yeah. I think is very close.
Point two off, yeah, because it was 9.78 and Barton was like 9.98.
It was 9.9, yeah. So interesting to have a guy in the interior. They say he's kind of like a workout warrior. He's got like all the physical attributes that you could possibly want. It sounds like he's got to work on some technique stuff and being able to address, you know, like big, long defenders. But like, if you look at this guy in space, he's so fast that it's fun to like watch him when he moves in space and gets to the second level and stuff like that. And it's like, man, this guy is like, you just go complete opposites. You go from this guy and Myers, which are just like, Myers is like obviously gigantic. And like, there's obviously pluses to having a big center, but like this guy, 6'3", 308, like a little more compact, but like fast, which Myers is not. So it'll be interesting to see if that's the route that they end up going, you know, having, if Myers can move somewhere else and eventually if Monk can play inside, like it'd be cool to have a fast center. You look at other guys that are super fast, like Kelsey out of Philly, like one of the guys who's like the elite quickness, and it seems to pay off, right? Like he's been in the league for how long and been super effective, you know, I think a few Pro Bowls, right? So it's like interesting to have that skill set where we haven't seen in a few years. So it'd be cool to see if he makes an impact there.
I think it's funny, and during the draft, especially day three, I was really just following along on Reddit and, you know, as picks were taken, especially the Packers guys, just, you know, seeing what like the instant reaction was. And almost hands down, the reaction was Green Bay goes and gets a dude in the fifth round that can play center guard and a little bit of tackle. And it's just assumed that he's going to become a Pro Bowler because that's basically what we do. So, I mean, not to put a whole lot of pressure on Jacob Monk or anything, but I mean, I'm with you. I'm excited about the pick. Like you said, a lot of competition. He can play basically any position on the offensive line, maybe not so much tackle, but you know, in a pinch, could he? Sure. So the more you can do, the more valuable you are. So I think the offensive line is going to be one of the more competitive position groups in training camp to watch.
And again, if you're a sicko, Google, you know, YouTube him, just watch. It is fun center tape to watch this guy. And I don't know, maybe his like legs are a little wide out too when he's like chopping around, but I loved watching him.
He looks like, I'm trying to think of like what he almost like an action, like if you made an action figure and you could only walk him around, like how action figures only have like one joint and their knees are always just a little bit, like that's like him. He's like a little stiff. Yeah. But it's like you can tell when he gets in contact with guys, he's like, oh, he's just really strong and he's fast. It's like, but there's like something is funny about the way that he moves a little bit. Not to, I mean, he'd throw me around, but it's just a little funny the way he moves.
I'll run through these next two guys. I don't think they're super interesting, but fifth round, 169 overall, safety Ketan Oladapo out of Oregon State. He's wearing number 27, aesthetic there. I don't like 27 for a safety. I like it more for a corner, maybe a running back. Another big physical safety, tallest and heaviest of the three that we drafted. He's like 6'1", 6'2". Led all safeties in run defense, according to Pro Football Focus last year. Likely a special teamer from the jump. Again, Oregon and Oregon State, so we'll see what the two later safeties that we drafted, how they do. And then moving on to the sixth round, 202 overall tackle, Travis Glover out of what was this, Oregon State or Georgia State. He'll order number 79. I just always think of Ryan Pickett with that one. Not an offensive number, but we'll see. 6'6", arrests of 4.71, not very good. He was a five-year starter at Georgia State, which is a relatively new program, so kind of tough to evaluate there. But the big thing for him is that he played in both the Senior Bowl and the Hula Bowl, and that seems to be the thing that had him jump off the board for the Packers, who always go to those later bowl games, and especially a guy who didn't go up against very good competition when he was playing, to have him match up against, you know, the top of the top of the draft class, and seeing how he went up against those guys, he seemed to have, you know, impressed the Packers enough. There was this quote from Brian Gutekunst. I think it definitely helped him. I think it helps anybody, whether you come from a Power 5 school or whether you come from a small school. But I do think sometimes when you come from a small school, you may have more questions about the level of competition. And then you walk out to the Senior Bowl and go against those guys and prove yourself a little bit. That certainly can help. Yeah, in his case, it did. So, anything here? I don't know if you guys have anything here. Another body?
I don't think he's another body. I think if he can figure out how to play on the back end, if he can learn how to play split safety, this guy has a high ceiling.
I was just talking about
Ladapo,
the tackle.
You mean?
Yeah, okay. I was just talking about the tackle.
Oh.
Yeah. I covered two there, but yes.
Sorry. Oladapo is who I might have now, stopped listening
now,
for a second.
Now I'm imagining a 6'6 big tackle playing safety.
Let me rewind.
Fake come down in the box.
Talking about Catan Oladapo, okay. If he can learn to play split safety on the back end, I think he's got a high ceiling in just like the size and athleticism category, and he has ball skills. A project for sure, but like that's a guy who like feels to me more like a size and athleticism Packers safety, like we would think about it. If he can, he does get beat on the back end, which is obviously a huge no-no in the NFL, and the speed that you're running into the NFL is completely different than college, especially where he played. But it's like, if that guy can learn how to feather on the back end a little bit better, his ball skills are really fun to watch if you watch like his highlight reel and stuff like that. Like, that's cool. I'm excited about him. I don't have anything on
the other guy.
On Glover.
On Travis.
Yeah, there you go.
Oladapo, the only thing I'll add, like you said, the size number one, again, just reading on Reddit, and these are a bunch of idiots like, well, the rest of us, frankly.
Yeah, like, but you, yep.
When he was picked, the consensus, again, was almost like, oh, I can't believe he's still on the board, or, oh, I really wanted, you know, such and such a team to take him. Like, when people say that, like, it just gives me warm and fuzzies. Like, hell yeah, you know, we're a little bit smarter than you guys. You know, it just makes me think we got good value. So I'm excited to see what he can do. Glover, I think, is interesting because he has that lower RAS. Like, he's a really strong run blocker. But playing tackle at a lower level, I don't see how he fits necessarily in a zone blocking scheme, especially if he were to move inside, which he did a little bit of in college. So I'll be interested to see if he stays at tackle or if we try him out inside.
He feels like a guy that in like 3 years you look at and go, okay, what did we get? Right? Like he sat around for 3 years, practiced for 3 years, and it's like, okay, is this guy worth
came in and played in relief of Sean Ryan for a couple of snaps, and
he's got a big frame. Like, he looks the part. It's just, you know, it's one of those guys that's a huge project.
But in the sixth round, you know, you're throwing darts at a dartboard, right? You know, same thing with Oladapo. He's got flaws just as much as Glover does, but
if it
works out, you know, it's a brilliant pick. And if it doesn't, I mean, did we really miss out on anything?
A lot of people are saying Oladapo should have gone way before Evan Williams, too, which is interesting.
True. Yeah, that is true.
It may be the size thing. But.
And I do wonder, we obviously get really high on our players, especially when they're around the team for a bit. But again, and no one likes Royce Newman. But again, Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta, I wonder how many guys, how many offensive linemen who are currently on the Packers 90-man roster are going to be on 53-man rosters come the regular season. Because it just... You know, big athletic guys, you know, like Ted Thompson, I'm sure so many people have said, but, you know, the good Lord only made so many of those big guys. So we'll have to see what shakes out there. Moving on, seventh round, quarterback Michael Pratt. Again, talking about guys who people thought could have gone earlier. Some people even had him as a third or fourth rounder, fell all the way to some kind of, you know, snip, snap, snip with Sean Clifford last year, who a lot of people had going undrafted. We took him in like the fifth or fourth or sixth round, whatever the fuck it was. But yeah, increases completion percentage every season. He's buddies with Sean Clifford too. My favorite tweet over the weekend was during Pratt's availability, he talked about the, you know, he's in that group chat with Clifford. They've stayed in contact. They're in there with a couple other buddies, blah, blah, blah. Mosqueda quote tweeted that and then used the gif of the Joker snapping the pool cue and tossing it to two thugs or whatever. It's like, that's what the QB competition is going to be this training camp. So I don't know if I'm excited about that, but I think Clifford surprised us more than we were expecting last year. So could be fun. But again, you know, it was going to be a trivia question, but he was the first seventh round quarterback drafted since our Lord and Savior, B.J. Coleman, who very strong jawline, too. That might have been my favorite part about him. Very small face, I feel like, but he had a great jawline. Anything about B.J. Coleman?
Fearless.
Yeah.
B.J. Coleman, fearless. Not scared to throw the ball anywhere.
He was
a gunslinger.
We had 2 days where he was the backup quarterback, and then they cut him, cut someone else. They signed Seneca Wallace and Scott Tolzien, and I don't think he played NFL football ever again after.
Oh, loved him, though. That attitude, that's the best attitude you can have.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think we have to talk about the seventh-string quarterback here. I'll run through the next pick, too. In the hole, Mr. Irrelevant. One, Kalen King, 255 overall, the corner out of Penn State. He will wear number 34. He's 5'11", 191. Tested poorly, a 6.68 RAS, which is one of the reasons why he fell in the draft. I'm sure a lot of people have heard this by now. But after the 2022 season, he was projected to be a first-round pick, and obviously that did not happen. Kind of got torched against Ohio State and Marvin Harrison Jr. He went from having 22 like passes defensed in the 22 season, and then last year he had like two or three. Again, didn't test well. A lot of NFL players were surprised with how far he dropped to. Like, I mean, Jaden Reed, you know, he was only a rookie last year, but he had been talking to him on like Instagram even when they were both in college together, and he was surprised with how far he fell. I forgot who else tweeted out that you know, we were getting a player. God, it was a very well-known player too. I just can't remember, but whatever. He does remind me of, I think I brought this guy's name up before, but Andrew Datko out of Florida State, a seventh round.
Nothing alike.
No two people have ever looked less like each other. Datko had some terrible, terrible skin on him too, but he was a tackle, seventh round pick.
Skin was bad?
Google him. He had a lot of acne scars, which is fine. I'm just saying, this is just things I remember. You know, everyone can be a good person. Maybe he was.
Haven't we all struggled with acne at one point in our lives?
God, dude, True. Freshman year of college, terrible for me. Terrible. I think I kept wearing the same Packer wool cap, and I didn't wash it enough, so it just... Anyways. But Andrew Datko, the year before we drafted him, he was like projected to be a first or second round pick. Well, he dropped all the way to the seventh round to us, and he was terrible. I still remember a Chargers-Packers preseason game. I think it was Melvin... Who was that defensive?
Ingram.
Yep, Melvin Ingram. Fucking... He was a turnstile. It was the most embarrassing like performance from an offensive lineman I've ever seen for the Green Bay Packers. But yeah, Kalen King. A king back in the secondary, another corner. Weird presser too, very emotional. It's the first time I ever remember like the beat reporters comforting someone. Like, as it went on, like, first it was tough questions. Bill Huber was like, so why did you drop? Like, very direct, which Bill always does, and some people didn't like that. And, you know, I mean, King was pretty much crying during his availability. But then later on, it was like Wilde and West jumping in. It's like, well, you know, Rasheed Walker, who you played with, he was a seventh round pick, and he played like every game last year, and they were talking about all these undrafted guys like trying to build him up, which I thought was like, what the fuck is going on here? But yeah, very weird, but a lot of potential. You know, obviously, anytime a guy could have gone that early and you get him this late, we'll see. And obviously, after last year with Carrington Valentine being a seventh round pick, which was also mentioned in the presser, perhaps he's got a chance of making a run here too.
I think if you look at his 22 year, everybody's impressed. If you look at the 23 year, everybody's like, what happened? And so it'd be interesting. Is it an injury? Like, what was the actual issue? He's a press corner. I don't know what they did schematically in 23, if that's different, but like the dude shows a willingness to come up at corner and make hits on tight ends and running backs in the backfield. And so it's like, that's something that is intangible. You can't, like, some guys have it, some guys don't. And like his 40 time was bad, but like if you watch some of his stuff, he can run with receivers. Like it's not, he's not, he doesn't look slow. So it's interesting. And then everybody talking about, why is this guy so late? Like, granted, a lot of the draft analysis was like, yep, he's sixth or seventh round, but it's like a lot of guys that play football are shocked that he's received where he was. And I don't feel like we get that reaction often. So I feel like for a seventh rounder, that means something, and it'll be cool to see if he can make an impact. And just like, I don't know. If we can get 22, Kalen King, amazing. If we get 23, Kalen King, maybe not so impressive. So, and maybe there's just the inconsistency there and we get a little bit of both and he winds up being average.
As a Big Ten football fan, and I've talked about this before, you know, just watching Penn State when they play the big games, Michigan, Ohio State, I'll throw in Wisconsin because I'm a Wisconsin fan, but the difference between 22 and 23, in my opinion, was 2022, he was lined up opposite Joey Porter Jr., who went in the first round to Pittsburgh. And so I don't wonder if it was, you know, 2022. The Big Ten is not known to throw the football around, you know, 50 times a game like the Big 12. And so you're probably not facing the depth of receiver talent that you are with like an LSU where they have two receivers taken in the top,
that's a good point,
you know, 30 point picks, right? So he's covering the second receiver from Indiana and Michigan that's running the ball 40 times and Purdue and Iowa who can't, they couldn't throw the ball in my seventh grade defense. And then in 23, he had to cover, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. He had to cover Roman Wilson from Michigan that got drafted. So there, all of a sudden he's the guy on defense. So it makes me wonder if he's just maybe better in a complementary role. And I'm not expecting him to come in and start opposite Jair. That's the beauty of getting him in the seventh round. There's Valentine and Eric Stokes ahead of him. So he's got an opportunity to learn, and there's not going to be a lot expected of him. But at the same time, there's not really anybody really entrenched ahead of him. So he has a real opportunity, I think, to get some playing time.
There was some talk about him potentially moving to safety too. I think some draft people were thinking that leading up to the draft. So something to monitor too. Oh, and what I forgot to mention. Did you guys see the news today with Alex Magoo?
Move to wide receiver.
I love that shit. I wonder if he's going to make it to training camp or if they're going to cut him before, but
they're going to cut him.
Yeah, probably. I remember Looney. I think he was out of Wisconsin. What was his first name?
Yeah.
He wasn't out of Wisconsin. Remember. It was Kevin Looney or Kavan or something like that, though.
What? Really?
So he was a defensive lineman. That doesn't sound right. He was a defensive
Cal, I think.
Okay, I think you are right. And we moved him to tight end. I was getting very excited to see him in training camp, and then they cut him beforehand, so that didn't happen. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But that's the draft.
James Looney.
There you go. Yeah, I didn't think.
There was a basketball player that was Kevon Looney out of like Marquette. I think that's who we were thinking of.
Yes.
Well, we're off the rails.
Yeah, all of us were thinking that. But last couple guys, just two guys to talk about for undrafted free agents. Again, with a pretty deep team and a pretty big draft class. Still sticking with the 11 picks that we had at the beginning after some moving up and down. But, and if you've listened to this podcast since the start in, 2019, long snapper has been something we've talked about. Our prize guest, Mr. Brett Goode, has come on several times. And maybe we have finally filled Goode's role by going back home, bringing in the undrafted Wisconsin long snapper, Peter Bowden. Okay, he's 6'2". He was the top long snapper out of this draft class, according to Dan Brugler, I assume most people. Guess what he ran the 40 in?
5.1 seconds.
5.12 seconds, yeah. I can't remember seeing a slower 40 time, but hey, the reason why we cut Brett Goode is because he wasn't athletic enough. He wasn't fast enough to run down on them punts. So it's like, hey, maybe we get back to business and just focus on making sure snaps are good, which with Orzich.
Let's make sure they get downfield quick. Who cares about the snap?
Yeah, which Orzich struggled with last year, and I think that might have had something to do with Andrew struggling a bit, but there's even a quote here. I don't even think it's that good, but I'm going to read it anyways. This is from him. What is nice about it is that there's nobody else involved in the play but me, he told Badger Extra. I don't need somebody to give me the ball. I don't need, like, a call or something. It's just me and the ball. So I always viewed it like, if I do what I have to do, and I can be confident in myself in doing the job, then I'll be fine. And it's like, what a long snapper. Like, that is the quote of someone who's just going to hang out on a roster for a decade doing next to nothing. So,
love it.
Hopefully, we never talk about him again.
Well, I snapped the ball. You guys go tackle him. That's not my job. Yeah. I did my part.
Yeah, you've seen my RAS score and my 40 time. There's no way I'm going to help on this. They got to run into me if I'm going to tackle him. And the other undrafted guy to talk about, there's a running back, too. We'll see if he... You know, Manuel Wilson, we didn't talk about at all leading into training camp last year, so maybe this guy will surprise too. But the offensive lineman, Donovan Jennings out of South Florida, 6'4", 323 pounds, a RAS of 8.93. He was a pre-draft visit. We gave him a shit ton of money. The Packers usually don't give a lot of, like, guaranteed money to undrafted free agents, you know? So they gave out one $10,000 signing bonus. And he's guaranteed $100,000, which is something that the Packers, once again, never really do with undrafted players. I think Ben Sims last year, he got something close to that from the Vikings, and then they cut him, wanted to stash him on the practice squad, but we're like, yoink, we will take you, and you will be our third tight end for the season. So that's it. Those are the notable undrafted guys. We'll see if anyone else pops up. There's only like 7 or 8 of them, which, again, you know, we're perennial. Like, every year, it seems like an undrafted guy makes it. And obviously, a couple made it last year with Heath and Emmanuel Wilson. So, with that, we still got some time here. Winners and losers. Pick one. Just pick one, your big winner or your big loser. I'm going to go first. I'm going to pick two, I guess. Brenton Cox and J.J. Anagbari. I'm sure people saw this. JJ allegedly did not actually tear his ACL. I've never heard of this before. And it was kind of...
Is that your winner? He's your winner.
Yeah, sorry. Winner. Did I say loser?
I just didn't... I didn't know if he was a loser for not having surgery or...
Fair. So they're both winners. We obviously didn't take an edge player in the draft. JJ did not tear his ACL. You know, he was in the locker room, like, dejected a couple days after, you know, the playoff win against the Cowboys, and he said he tore his ACL. And Wes Hodkowitz was saying he knew something was up leading up to it, because just with minicamp and, well, not minicamp, but OTAs going on, that JJ is like running around the locker room, and he's like, what's going on with this guy? And maybe this was even like the week after, like leading into the Niners game, he was surprised with how much he was moving. So apparently he didn't get surgery. He's not going to get surgery. They're going to roll with it and see what happens. I don't know, but so that's a winner. But Brenton Cox, for me, you know, again, the undrafted guy, played at Georgia and Florida, got kicked off both of those teams, undrafted guy, 5-star recruit. It seems like we're pretty confident in him, because we didn't really bring in much for undrafted free agents either, didn't draft anyone. So very curious to see if he fills some type of role next year with being, what, the depending on how early JJ is back, the fourth end on this defense. So... That was my big winner. Todd, who's your big winner or loser?
I wasn't prepared for this whole winner loser thing.
Oh, my God. You're a loser.
So I'm going to say, I guess, just thinking draft stuff, I'm going to say winner.
Okay.
All the Packers wideouts, because we didn't draft anybody.
Okay. Wow. Fair. Yeah. Bo's brother got drafted. Max. In the second
That's
round.
That's true. I was a little disappointed. Yeah, which was interesting, too. There was a run on corners, and he was one of the earlier ones to be picked. I don't know. Losers? Anthony Johnson Jr.?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, is that...
I do think that's a go, because he might be fighting for a roster spot now. And
that's the way it feels with the three safety picks. It's like, we know Goody likes... He likes to hold on to his investments, right? And I just don't... I don't know. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough go for him.
Yeah, unless you're Lou Nichols, then they might move on from you. But yeah, I feel bad for him, too. Out of Iowa State, he was a corner.
Todd,
And then he was going to declare for the he was going to declare for the draft. He moved to safety so that his draft stock would rise. He still went in the seventh round. Didn't get to play much last year, and now he might be shit out of luck just after 1 year in the league. Billy, you got something?
Yeah, Todd, I like your pick, actually, on short notice or no notice at all of the wide receivers being winners. In particular, I was going to say Bo Melton and Malik Heath. You know, I remember going into the draft, and I was one of them. I wondered if we would take a wide receiver to just, you know, later on in the draft. Certainly not day one or day two, but maybe fourth, fifth round, you know, take a flyer in a sixth or seventh rounder. Depends on how we feel about Bo Melton and Malik Heath as, you know, fifth wide receiver. Not to mention Christian Watson has had struggles to stay on the field.
Huh?
You know, Romeo Doubs only has a four-year contract. He has 2 years left on his deal. Who knows, you know, thinking longer term, if we're going to try and bring him back or if he's going to price himself out. You know, it feels like it's always a good idea, especially where we were at a couple years ago with the wide receiving room other than Devontae. Feels like a good idea to keep backfilling the talent in that room. So it would not have shocked me at all if we brought in one or maybe even two draft picks to compete with Bo and Malik for, you know, kind of that fringe playing time.
I wonder if I have them as winners. I wonder if that's going to be like every year Goody drafts multiple offensive linemen, except for last year. So I wonder if that's going to be what this year was. And then next year, when Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs are in contract years, and I'm not sure about Bo Melton and those guys with how their contract work as undrafted free agents. But then next year, we hit it again, too, draft with a couple of guys. And again, I wonder if we're going to trade one of those guys away, too, because we have so many good wideouts. And Doubs just seems like a guy you might be able to move. I don't know.
Doubs on paper looks like a guy you would move, but him and Jordan Love, they fucking click. And so it's like, is that a tough, like, do you fuck with the chemistry? I don't know.
I'd rather fuck with Jaden Reed and Dontavian.
His numbers don't blow you away, though.
I fucks with them.
Yeah, I don't know. But Billy, what is your big winner or loser then?
So the winners I had the wide receivers, in particular, Bo and Malik Heath, I would say. Losers, I'm going to say Sean Clifford, honestly.
Yeah.
And not so much of anything that he didn't do last year. It's just, I really like Michael Pratt, actually. You know, he was a guy that I kind of had my eye on before the draft.
Oh, really?
Getting him in the seventh round, I was pretty happy about. This dude took Tulane, who is a, you know, moribund school that has never done anything in the history of the program, I'm going to say. Maybe I'm wrong.
Whoa. A lot of hate for the Green Wave.
he led them to the 2022, I think it was the 22 Cotton Bowl against USC, and future Heisman Trophy winner and number one overall draft pick Caleb Williams led them back from a 15-point deficit in the last 4 minutes. He's a really similar dude to Clifford. Like, he's a winner. He won 23 games or whatever his last 2 years in college. That's despite losing a bunch of talent his senior year, his offensive coordinator, you know, still came back and had a really productive year. Gritty type of guy, you know, kind of a sneaky athlete. He's not going to be a Lamar Jackson out there, but kind of like Jordan Love and even Sean Clifford, like, he'll make plays with his feet. So
he's mobile.
I think he's got a really good chance of sticking, especially now that Alex Magoo has moved to wide receiver. That just opens up even more snaps for him in OTAs coming up here this month or next month, and then in training camp.
I think the writing's on the wall. Pratt's number two, and Clifford's gone.
So sometimes this happens. It usually happens with, like, undrafted guys. He took number 17, which is Anders Carlson's number. And right now they both have number 17, I'm pretty sure. Pratt and Anders. So I wonder how that's going to shake out. And I'm thinking of this now. I'm going to bet Pratt wins out in training camp. They cut Clifford and want to stash him on the practice squad. And I'm thinking someone in the NFC North is going to snatch him up. I don't know why. Just because he's
Clifford?
Yeah, because he's a good, once again,
he's a throw interceptions kind of guy.
Yeah, that, and he's good in the room, so we'll see. I don't know. I kind of thought that about fucking Ken Burkhardt.
You think the Bears are going to pick him up and put him in that QB room?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I guess they do need a backup too, right? Because they have the The one undrafted dude from last year came in with the tattoos.
We know how much the Bears and Vikings like former Packers players.
Yeah, well, it definitely didn't happen this offseason. But I guess to wrap things up, why don't we go to that too? The NFC North, thoughts on their draft? The Bears, they get their quarterback, wide receiver combo. A little upset about that. I really hoped Odunze wasn't going to end up there. Vikings, yep. Sit pat, take. Well, I guess they did end up moving up one spot. But
it didn't sit anywhere.
Yeah.
They couldn't find a seat.
Taking J.J. McCarthy and trading away their future for, I don't know what, the top defensive player in a very bad defensive player draft. So we'll see there. And then the Lions just scare me because they seem to draft well every year, too. Because, you know, they took the Alabama corner right before us, too. Like, they just kind of take the best player available that fall to him, and it just happens to, you know, be a need for them. But overarching thoughts, I feel like the NFC North is going to be pretty competitive here. I always think we're going to be competitive, but especially on offense now, it's, I don't know, I'm not scared, but it's like, there's at least potential for these other teams now.
I think, talking about the Vikings, pretty much all their draft capital was spent on the two players. And you look at, I think you're more excited about Dallas Turner as a player. And if you're a Vikings fan, it's fucking fingers crossed and hoping to God that J.J. McCarthy is the guy. Because between those two picks, what did people figure they gave up, like a fifth round pick?
No,
to move
well,
up?
Like fifth overall.
On the board. Sorry.
Yeah.
Number five overall. That's what I meant. Not a fifth round pick. That would be nothing.
Oh my God, no.
A number five overall pick. To move up, they moved up from 11 to 10, and then they moved up. I forget what the other one was.
They moved up to 23, and then moved up to like 15.
Well, is that what it was? 15. So I just like Dallas Turner's obviously where they got him. That's a great guy to put on your team, right? Like I'm not saying he's not. And to Danielle Hunter's gone, Dallas Turner comes in. Like that's a fun thing to look at. But like if you're looking at J.J. McCarthy as the guy, and you use that draft capital to move up to get him, it's like, man, you better really hope that that's your guy. And he's coming into a good situation, but it's like, I don't know. J.J. McCarthy didn't throw the ball a lot. They didn't trust him when the game was on the line, seemingly, on a team that was built more to run the ball. And it's like, just like there's enough red flags with J.J. that I'm like, that's a lot of draft capital to give up to go after a guy that seemingly you don't have enough information on, and the information you do have is spotty. That's how I feel about it. If that was us moving up, I would be mad. I would be like, what are we doing? It's like how I felt about taking Anders Carlson. Like, we got a guy who didn't play well in college, and like that's the guy we use draft capital on to kick the ball, and then turns out not great at kicking the ball. So it's like,
yeah,
I don't, it, bad comparison maybe, but it's like, I don't know. That's how I feel about the Vikings situation. The Bears got two decent guys. You know, Caleb, I mean, they had all the draft capital in the world to spend. Makes sense. They got a lot of holes to fill, though, also. You know, their defense is kind of garbage. It's like, I don't know. And the Lions, like you said, solid. They're solid, right? And that's what's like almost more scary than the other two of like getting these big name guys that are either, you know, boom or bust. And quarterbacks are always such a crapshoot anyway, but it's like the Lions are just sitting there with Jared Goff and just like putting pieces on the team, which is like more scary. That no one's talking about it, but it's more scary.
Well, it's like last year, you know, in early on in the draft, they took a tight end and a safety, and they ended up being like the best players at those positions, and they were huge difference makers. Right. So it's like, yeah, they're quiet, but then when once the regular season comes, it's like, oh wow, they did draft well.
I'm going to agree with Chicago and Minnesota. Like, you like the pieces on paper. The Bears get Caleb Williams, a franchise quarterback. Supposedly, they get a wide receiver, you know, in the top 10 to go along with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. So really exciting, you know, quarterback and wide receiving room in Chicago. They only had three more picks the rest of the draft, and one of them was spent on a punter, which might be the Caitlin Clark of punting for all I know. And I mean, he basically was at Iowa. He was really good, but I mean, you're going to spend a fourth round pick on a punter? Like, wouldn't you rather have a few extra draft picks to, you know, fill in some of that depth? Like, Chicago has good pieces, but I don't think they have the depth. Like, their offensive line is fine. Their defense is fine. But, you know, Williams and Odunze and Keenan Allen are only going to take you so far. And then same thing with Minnesota. They go up, they get their supposed franchise quarterback. They get, you know, one of the best defensive players in the draft. They had three picks in the top four rounds. They had four in the sixth and the seventh total. So you lost out, and I saw in advance of the draft that a lot of teams felt that kind of after the first five into the early six is when the talent started to drop off, that, you know, there just wasn't the overall depth to this class. And I think part of it might be the transfer portal and kids staying in school longer with the COVID year and whatever. But Minnesota, again, needs some of that depth, and they didn't necessarily fill a lot of it. They spent a pick on a kicker as well. So
that's right.
They have some pieces. I don't know that they have the depth of the team that Green Bay has, or certainly Detroit. Like you said, the way that they've drafted, it certainly feels like Detroit and Green Bay duking it out for number one. I think Minnesota and Chicago are both good enough that they could go, you know, this is extremely early, it's May 1st, but they could go 7-10, but I struggle to see them competing for a playoff spot right now.
It's so Minnesota, and this is true for everybody, I guess, but like more than anything, Minnesota and Chicago, it's all QB play. If the QBs play well, they're going to be somewhat successful. If those QBs don't play well, they're going to suck. And so, like, obviously that's the game, right? And I'm not saying that this is out of the norm, but it's just very much dependent on QB play and what are those guys going to look like. And so,
but unless,
feel better about Caleb Williams.
Unless those quarterbacks are great, I don't think the rest of the team is good enough to take them from, you know, 500 into the playoffs.
I don't believe either of those defenses are very good in 2024.
I think the Bears will give us
better.
Some trouble. I mean, they're
better.
But we forget, they still went 7-9 last year with fucking Justin Fields as their quarterback. Their defense was very good the second half of the year. And they, you know, I don't know how... I do like the way that they've drafted. You know, I don't know if I've said this before, the free agency moves haven't been as good. But,
yeah,
I don't know.
It does seem...
It's still, for me, to be optimistic, is that coaching staff... Especially on offense. They brought on Seattle's offensive coordinator, which I don't think he was very good. So we'll see. You know, and JSN didn't have anything good to say about him when he was asked during like Super Bowl week.
That's right.
So that's telling too. And then the Vikings, Todd, you were talking about how you'd be pissed if you were a fan. They didn't really move up too much. You know, they only moved up one spot for JJ. They did have the 11th overall pick, and they just had to, I think they gave up a fourth or a fifth. To just move up that one spot.
They gave up stuff in 25. And was it stuff in 25 they gave up as well?
I think so. Because I know in next year's draft, all they have is their first round pick. And then they have two fifth round picks. And that's all that they have. But if, you know, like, I guess it would be extremely, extremely hypocritical if we gave them shit for giving up an extra fourth round pick to get their franchise quarterback when we gave up an extra fourth round pick to draft Jordan Love.
It's a fair point, and it's hard to sit here and be like, oh, what do you do with your quarterback situation when it's like, when you don't have a quarterback?
Right. Sam Darnold's staring you down. Yeah.
So maybe give him a little bit of credit, I guess. If we were in that situation, I guess I probably would be happy with a whole lot. I'm happy we're not in that situation. I'm happy we have Jordan Love. I'm happy that we pissed everybody off 4 years ago to have what we have today, right? So, like, and maybe a little bit of, like, I did want to touch on this, like, the Atlanta situation. Did you hear what the GM for Atlanta said when he was, obviously, there was a big presser after they drafted, who's the dude from...
Penix.
From Washington.
Yeah,
Penix Jr. And he basically said, he's like, well, we saw what the Packers did with Jordan Love, and like this is the effect to that of like we're taking a guy that's gonna sit behind, you know,
yeah,
an All Pro or what, I don't know what is his highest accolade, you know, basically Pro sit Bowler. Behind an experienced quarterback for 4 years, 3 years, and see what he can do. It doesn't make your current QB happy. That's a pick that they can help. But like literally, that's been the story in the transition from Favre to Rodgers and Rodgers to Love. It's the exact same story. Everybody gives him a ton of shit both times. It's interesting that Atlanta is the only other franchise that has tried this method.
The weird thing with Atlanta, though, is Penix is already 24. He'll be 24 this month, I think.
Yes.
So Kirk Cousins, like, they can't get out of Kirk Cousins' contract for basically 2 years. So you're going to sit and wait on Penix until he's 26. I mean, Jordan, how old is Jordan Love? 23? 24?
He was 20 when we drafted him.
He was 20. So that's a 4-year difference. You know, right? So we basically got Jordan Love his first year when he was 24, and he had sat for 3 years.
It's a little bit apples and oranges, but the philosophy, it's interesting that they're the only ones to try it.
It's the same philosophy, but boy, there's a lot of risk involved. And if it works out, great, but just the way Atlanta went about doing it, giving all that guaranteed money to a 36-year-old quarterback, and then you're going to have to eat a bunch of dead cap anyway after 2 years minimum. And then your quarterback isn't going to be, he's going to be 26 when he finally starts, most likely. It's just, it's weird.
You can't do both. It's, you're trying it, but it's like, hey, I'm really good, you know, playing this flight simulator game. I can drive this Boeing up in the air, you know, because it's, all they had to do was draft J.J. McCarthy and it would make sense. Then right. I'm completely draft fine later. With it. But it's just Penix is old as shit. You know, you should only do one or the other. What's funny, too, is, you know, with Rodgers, we gave him that new contract 1 or 2 years before we drafted Jordan Love. And the way that contract shit, it didn't make much sense either. But Kirk hasn't even played for the Falcons yet. Like, it's a very weird thing in multiple ways. But I don't know. I was fine with it. I think it kind of helped, you know, players always fall down more because of that. But J.J. McCarthy is going to be, he has such a hateable face. The coif, his hair, that picture.
What are you saying?
Coif. That's what that hair, that's what it's called, the coif.
It's called a coif?
Yeah.
I'm so old.
Yeah, I know. But he's going to be such a hateable guy. So, I guess I'm looking forward to that, but whatever. This is when the Bears and the Vikings have their fun, is during the offseason, come the regular season. We'll put our foot up their ass again, and we'll just go from there. So, whatever. We can give them this, but outside of that, that's the draft.
Were you guys sad? No Cooper DeJean? Like, when we traded back right after the Eagles picked him, were you guys sad?
I was, if it wasn't
Billy,
Brian...
were you sad?
If it wasn't Brian Bulaga announcing it, then
it would have been an amazing.
I wasn't
moment.
Sad anyways, because it's like, why are we getting so attached to fucking? I want an offensive tackle anyways, and we got the best safety in the draft that we would have taken. It's like I don't give a shit. Like, sure,
no, he's white,
and he's fun.
In the second round,
I know.
In the second round,
Bullard,
because the first round had a come and gone.
Bullard,
and it was like, pro Bullard over Cooper.
I was not. DeGene. I was not upset about losing Cooper to Gene because. He only played corner at Iowa. I know a lot of teams see him as a safety, but is he going to go to safety full-time, or is he going to play kind of a hybrid? Iowa, like, I just think back to Josh Jackson and how excited we were to get him. And come to find out, he played his own scheme, and that's not what we play. And, you know, Jeff Hafley, maybe even more so, is going to play that press coverage man-to-man corner. And I just didn't feel comfortable with Cooper DeJean playing that at corner for us, and then trying to take a corner in college and convert him to safety and expect him to start day one with a first round draft pick. I didn't like it. And, you know, once the second round came, I mean, nobody thought that Cooper DeJean was a first round draft pick. And he finally went, you know, a couple of picks before Cooper. I would rather have Edger and Cooper over Cooper DeJean.
With how the second round went, no regrets. I wouldn't change our second round to have Cooper DeJean on this roster.
It's not that I don't like Bullard. I didn't see Cooper DeJean as a safety.
Yeah.
I didn't see him as a corner. Okay. I saw him as a safety.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I saw him as a safety, and I thought he would be a super fun box safety slash nickel. Obviously, Keyshawn's there, but it's like, with all the guys we drafted, like, is Keyshawn really the nickel anymore? Like, he got that money, but it's like, with all these guys, it's like, that's going to be a tough spot. We're going to have a good nickel defense, which is going to be really fun. But I was a little bit disappointed in the moment, like, when they took him and we immediately traded back.
You were mad.
We wanted him. And then later on, Gutekunst lies all the time.
Yes.
But he was like, yeah, he wasn't part of our thing. But I was like, a little sketchy the way immediately when the pick was in, the Packers traded back four or five picks.
But he did say that they already had that set up.
But he lies about everything. So do you believe what he says?
Something like that, yeah. Because we obviously didn't value him. Bullard was ahead of him. And just the fact that he actually answered the Cooper DeJean question pre-draft at the presser, I was like, if we actually valued him, Goody would, you know,
not say
much at all. But he gave a good answer. I'm like, we're not going to drop this guy. I'd be very
surprised. I heard him after the fact go, he didn't factor into our trade. I was like, I don't know if I believe that. Yeah. Like, Gutekunst will bring guys in for visits that he doesn't intend on drafting. So, like, what does that tell you?
Right.
No,
that's a long con right there.
I agree. I don't necessarily believe Goody when he says that he didn't factor DeJean into his trade back at all. The way I looked at it in the moment was, there's, you know, two, three guys that I could see as wanting with this pick, and we're trading back four or five. Like, he knows that one of these dudes are going to be on the board for us to take. You know, if it's DeJean and the other two are gone, okay, we'll take DeJean and we'll be happy about it. But like I said, we traded back and I had a pretty good feeling in the moment. Like, Goody knows what's going on. Like, I think we're chasing Edger and Cooper, and he knows we can get a little bit of extra value. That I might be wrong. We might have used that pick to move up and get Monk, did we not? I'd have to go back and look. But at any rate, I mean, get a little bit of extra value, a little bit of flexibility on day three, and we still got our guy and had a nice consolation prize on the board. That's my thought anyway. Again, could be wrong, but that was my idea going into it anyway.
I still love the Edger and Cooper pick. It's a great pick.
Same. Me too.
All I heard is you hate Edger and Cooper and you hate Bullard and you wish that this white guy was in our secondary.
I love them both so much, actually, and I think they make this defense so much better.
Okay. Cool.
Tough guys. Dogs.
If Brian Bulaga would have said Iowa on the stage, like, I think...
Oh, it would have been amazing.
The state of Wisconsin would have exploded. Like, that would have been hilarious. But outside of that, I think we're a better football team for not taking Cooper DeJean and taking the guys we did. But
I also just love that Cooper DeJean was in a pole barn. That's great.
Oh, I didn't...
That was the most Iowa draft party of all time.
It was great. It was so fun.
With that, God, I think we went pretty long. I'm going to have to edit some shit because Todd's internet stopped for like 25 minutes. But I don't have anything else. Do you guys have anything else? Eh. Nope.
It's over. It was fun.
Yeah.
I had a good time.
Good. What a time to be alive. Well,
is it time for training camp yet? I'm excited. Let's go.
I'm ready for training camp tweets.
Oh, nothing's better than the training camps. I can't wait to hear about Caleb Jones just absolutely destroying in one-on-ones again.
Who do you think is going to be the training camp, like, hero? Do you have a guess?
I don't know. There's too many fucking... I don't know.
You take a guess.
I would say Dontavian Wicks, just because he was so quiet last training camp, too, and he was banged up. Like, we never had many Wicks tweets, and... Okay, we need to end this fucking episode. We can't talk about something else again. So with that, Eric Koskinen, please don't sue us. I was like, wait a minute, I'm getting fucking roped into this. All right, stop. 3, 2, 1...
Down in debt. Yeah, honey, I ain't leaving. cigarettes. Cool. Okay. 1 foot to the left. Is that how it goes? At one point. Okay. Not, maybe not in that order. Okay. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello, it's me.
In state of our minds.
Hello.
It's me, Todd, joined by Spencer and Billy. Boys, I think if you're ever sick, if you get like, if you are dying.
Yeah. Well, Spencer's sick and then the next one. Well, Spencer's died. We have,
we're going to continue the RSS podcast. Feed.
Okay. We good?
Yes.